This is a Baby Brunch podcast.
Did it feel like this cross, you know, your grace, or did you feel like there is help out there for you?
It's funny that you talk about the grace. I think in the first or second chapter, I talk about that. I talk about how, you know, reproductive illnesses are things that in the community I come from, you have to bear, you know, you have to bear the fact that you are infertile or you have issues.
This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior gentle all-purpose emollient moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax.
We've really wondered for a long time how we will start this conversation. And I have asked gynecologists, I've had GPs inquire. And then Nadine, I'm so proud of you for speaking and being an opinion maker and an activist and for sharing your story more than just on this platform, but to create a book. So Nadine Dirks is our guest today on Baby Brunch. For her full biography, I really want you to check out babybrunch.co.za. We also talk about her book on the platform. But firstly, Nadine, I want you to tell all of our listeners and viewers what the book is about.
So, I mean, in short, my book is about my journey with endometriosis, particularly in the public health care system as a woman of color. That's the story in short, but obviously there are bits of interesting things that I think everyone should check out. There are opportunities for people to learn outside from endometriosis, how people can advocate for themselves, what doctors can do to address their biases. So I think it's a book that there are many target audiences for.
A lot of us want to keep quiet when it comes to personal disease, personal problems. Yeah. Why are you so confident and outspoken about it?
You know, I think it's because I grew up in a community that was very conservative. In, you know, we didn't talk about our period. It was this taboo thing that happened and you don't talk about it. And growing up in my home, however, my parents were very open about, you know, anything related to sexual and reproductive health and rights. And so I think I get it from them. And I'm very comfortable having these conversations because I know how important it is. I know how freeing it is for me and for others. And so, yeah, I think that's just what kind of makes me go, okay, this is what I want to do with my time.
I want to remind you of how important your story is, because here's the thing, right? If we wanted to know about endometriosis, we could just go to Google and read some information about it. I also must tell you that I felt very sad when I was online and I saw the word disease and endometriosis, because a lot of the time we think our health and reproductive health is us. You know, like if we can't have a baby, yes, we're thinking, oh, what's wrong with me? When we have a heavy period, you're thinking, what's wrong with me? You know, like, so I was very sad, first of all, to see the word disease and endometriosis. And then the other thing that I want to tell you is, I think it matters a whole lot that you are who you are from Mitchell's Plain, teaching our daughters, because I have three of them. Why do I want to cry? I have three. I have three daughters, and one of them's turning 9 this year, and mommy has to explain to her about HPV. And, you know, so you are representing more than just a book and endometriosis, my love. You are helping a lot of people by doing what you do. And we need to thank your parents too. So we might as well dedicate this to them.
Yeah.
What is endometriosis for people who are landing on this and who is even too afraid to Google?
So endometriosis essentially happens when the cells within your uterus, which should be there naturally, somehow occurs in other parts of your body where it shouldn't be. So we know that those cells every month, they shed out of the uterus. But what happens if you have it on your ovaries, for example? There's no place for it to shed. So you're having this kind of internal bleeding effect constantly happening. So in short, that's what endo is. And it's a very complicated and under-researched illness as well.
A lot of my peers and people in my group, like when they have gotten endometriosis, and I even heard you refer to it, you know, as endo, because it's how yes. we speak, right? Did it feel like this cross, you know, your kruis, or did you feel like there is help out there for you?
It's funny that you talk about the kruis. I think in the first or second chapter, I talk about that. I talk about how, you know, reproductive illnesses are things that in the community I come from, you have to bear, you know, you have to bear the fact that you are infertile or you have issues. So it's such a issue. And then in terms of getting a diagnosis, it was very difficult. The public healthcare system is so overburdened. I came across doctors who didn't know what was wrong with me, who didn't even know that endometriosis existed. So it was a long, drawn-out journey getting to that point of getting a diagnosis and trying to figure out and rule out different things. It was only until much later when I finally knew what was wrong with me, but I went for a number of years, about 8 years, not knowing.
So let's shorten it for women who are part of our public healthcare. I mean, surely you want to go and see your gynae or your GP and you want to know this is the situation. I can also tell you this, that I know of many women, one in particular, my friend who I spoke to yesterday, who happens to be in private healthcare. And she for years went undiagnosed. I mean, she eventually found what she calls the right gynae to help her because her first operation wasn't successful. Like if you had to get your diagnosis, I know it's terrible, but if you had to hit that journey again, where would you go first? And what do you want to say to people? Like how, first of all, how do you know what are the symptoms? So what do you physically feel and what do you see? And shorten it for us. Like if I think I might have it, where do I go?
So I think that question is interesting because whether you're in public healthcare or private healthcare, I think a lot of the same things can take place. Of course, public healthcare has a lot of limitations, but I think one of the most important things that people need to keep in mind when they think that there might be something wrong with them in terms of having endo is that when you go to a doctor and they either refuse to treat you or they don't know what's going on or whatever the case may be, you have to go there and advocate for yourself. So go in already with a list of things that's wrong with you. You know, tell them, I have my period for 7 days. It's heavy. I'm, you know, requiring to change my pad however many times a day. You know, I know it's a lot of work, but go in there armed with information. If they turn you away or they tell you nothing's wrong with you and you know, I mean, we all know our bodies, go and find another person to talk to. And if they don't know, find another person to talk to until you get down to the bottom of what's going on. And as for symptoms, one of the biggest things that I recall very early in the journey was these very heavy and long menstrual cycles that were also so painful that it would make me pass out. And I would get dizzy, I would have headaches, I would throw up, I would have pain in my lower back, my pelvic area, my legs would ache. And you know, the thing about this is that people tell you, oh, but that's normal. You know, having cramps is normal. And yeah, of course, your uterus is a muscle and it constricts as you have your period. Of course, the muscle constricting is not the most comfortable thing. It's probably not going to be entirely pain-free. But it shouldn't be to the point where it is debilitating, where you are missing school, you are missing work, you are fainting, you know, your mom has to pick you up from the bottom floor. Those sorts of things should not be happening to you. And if someone tells you it's normal, find a different person. It's not normal.
Sure. What are some of the biases around this? I mean, you said to me, a lot of doctors in public care didn't, they couldn't diagnose you. Let's not say they didn't know. Let's say they couldn't diagnose you, or they haven't come across endometriosis before. What else did you experience so that we know what to take to them? I'm saying this not because we want to slam our healthcare. I want us to be equipped so that when we go there, we've got a menstrual health diary. We've got a list of symptoms that you wrote down. You can tell them for how long this has been happening to you. And you are armed with knowing your body.
Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, we deal with a lot of biases in our healthcare system, particularly in places where, you know, I suppose people are of a different class. You are going to most likely deal with issues of racial bias, gender bias, just all sorts of funny things. For me, it was coming in and assumptions being made based on race that my people, it was said to me, you people, you know, we get botched abortions, and when it goes wrong, we go to the public healthcare system seeking help when we have an infection or we're heavily bleeding and whatever. And unfortunately, if you have a child, you have to be there, and sometimes they separate you from the child while this is happening to your child. I mean, I was 14, and this was the sort of, I would say, interrogation that I was facing when I would end up in the hospital just unwell. So there's lots of biases around who presents with the disease. I remember also not being taken seriously because doctors at the time, and many still have the stigma that endometriosis is a disease that largely affects people of European descent. So they oftentimes, it's not the first thing they think of when you present as someone who is not a white woman. So in my case, that was also a big deal. I remember one of my doctors coming to me post-surgery and saying, oh my God, I never would have guessed this. And I asked him why, and he told me, he said to me, well, as far as he knows, this is something that, you know, many European women complain about, but this is the first for him. And so I asked myself how many times this issue has come up and someone's been sent home with this illness, and it's just been your own biases get in the way of properly diagnosing an illness.
While you're in your journey to try and seek the right medical care, you know, there's the discomfort and, mm-hmm. as you've mentioned, some of the symptoms that really prevents you from living an ordinary life the way that you want it. How do you manage the chronic pain? I mean, how do you manage while waiting for the right person to come around to help you?
Sure, that's an interesting question. For me, it was just figuring out what works for me, and that takes time as well. Realizing that heat really helped. So I'm talking hot baths, hot water bottles, you know, you find those like little pad things that you can stick on your body and it heats up. So those sorts of things were beneficial for me. In trying to kind of alleviate some of the pain, and taking over-the-counter painkillers, that was quite helpful. At some point also, I finally found a doctor who would agree to writing a prescription for me for contraceptives, which would, the way I most mean to take them was to stop my period from happening. And that was quite helpful in, you know, not missing school and being able to do things. So in the meanwhile, that's what I was contending with.
How do you, what happens next? So now there's a diagnosis, they know that you've got endometriosis. I mean, what happens next? How did you find out, okay, this is where I need to go, and this is the right doctor that I'm going to let be? I don't like an operation. You know, I always think like being operated on is the last. You know, even when we have our babies, most moms will tell you, we're going to try for natural and then we'll go for the C-section, you know, or whatever. You know, we all have our own preferences. But how do you decide, this is the doctor, I feel comfortable with you, and I'm going to have you cut me up, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you don't have a choice, right? In the public healthcare system, you don't get to decide who you are comfortable with. You get assigned a doctor, and that's that. Whether you don't agree with the doctor or they don't treat you well, that's not a choice that you get to make. And as for surgery, that was also something I had no control over, because I had a mass on my right ovary that was so large that it was causing intense pain and swelling, and I was having difficulty walking. So I didn't have a choice. They had to cut me open. They told me it was an emergency surgery, and that was all. I was 19 years old, so I think it's probably only in private care where you're able to, you know, doctor shop. But that's not a privilege that you get in the public healthcare system. It wasn't something I got.
Are you healed?
No, not by a long shot. I've had surgeries that have gone horribly wrong. And based on that, it's affected, you know, every part of my life. It has caused disability. I have, you know, chronic pain, obviously, because of all of this. So, I mean, I don't think that there's any healing when you have an illness that will be with you for your entire life, and you just have to figure out ways of managing it and still being able to, you know, live your life.
So how do we become positive advocates that inspires people about endometriosis? I mean, I don't want to be graphic or dramatic, but it's like saying I have cancer and it's not going to go away, and so we're going to live our best life while having it.
Yeah, it's very much like that. I think, you know, when we start talking about measures and ways that we want to try and spread awareness, probably the most important thing is getting the information out there, allowing people in so they know what it is, they know what this is like, they know what to look for. And once people have that knowledge, I think it also destigmatizes an illness, right? So you then have more opportunity to kind of share that with the world and have people kind of just be there for you and understand what this is like. But it is very much learning to live with such a debilitating disease and making peace with the fact that there are limitations to what I can and can't do. And I have to be gentle with myself, and I have to surround myself with people who are understanding. You know, when I say to someone, I can't do this today, I thought I could, you know, understanding that I have a support system where, and if I do that, it's not going to be, oh, you know, she's so rude, she said she would do this and she didn't. So I think education is important. Once people know about something, they're able to be around you and kind of, I don't know, assist you. They are able to understand where you're coming from and, you know, just envelop you in some comfort at least.
I love your element of support. I mean, if there's any advocate in the world, it would be a parenting and a support activist. Yeah, I love that people practice empathy and that we've become better as humans, you know, to do that. That if someone shares with you that you are willing to learn, and that we know, okay, well, these are your limits for now, not forever, you know, like this is what Nadine can't do right now. I want to ask you a personal question. I mean, are you on a series of vitamins every day to try and make sure that you recuperate what you lose? Like, how do you support your immune system? Do you go on a series of vitamins to make sure that your body is supported?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, there are vitamin injections that I get once a month. There are supplements that I take every day. There are probiotics that I take every day, just to make sure that I am at least taking care of the basics, making sure that I'm taking things that also kind of comfort me and the symptoms, so that it kind of mitigates the effects of endo. And so, yeah, I mean, I do all of those things. I'm very, you know, I suppose I'm strict with that regimen of making sure that I have enough magnesium and vitamin D, and I need all of these things to keep going. And the same goes for if you are bleeding heavily, you need to make sure that your iron levels are checked out and that you're taking a supplement and so forth. So, I mean, it's super important if you're someone who has endo to kind of find out what it is that you need. Also working with different providers, healthcare providers, and sometimes they can also shed light on what you need to do, what you need to be eating, how much of it. So that's also been a part of my journey, is just figuring out what I need in particular, because it's not, you know, a generalized thing.
Do you want a baby one day?
I mean, this is something that I think I've thought about quite often in recent months, and I'm not sure. I think that having conversations with doctors about what this would be like, especially with the type of endo I have and the stage that it's at, the fact that it would be quite difficult and it would be a potentially dangerous situation for me, is really scary. And then the other bit to that also is the option of adoption, which, you know, you kind of look at it and also observe and just kind of try to see, would this work? I think as someone with the stage of endometriosis that I have, I also think about my limitations. You know, you need to be quite active when you have little ones, especially when kids are older, it's a bit easier. And so I do think about it and worry that potentially it would be a situation where a child might, you know, not be getting the best experience that they could be getting. So, I mean, I think that it's one of those things where I must think about it properly and decide on what I would potentially like. But I'm also not, I don't think that I'm necessarily heartbroken if it doesn't happen.
Throughout all of this and creating so much awareness with a story that could be heartbreaking, you know, you are taking a disease, a chronic illness, and you are creating education around it. So just so that you know, Nadine is not just an author, but she's also pursuing her master's degree in women and gender studies. What led you on to make this a career? You do such cool things to help the world understand each other.
Yeah. So I think it was accidental. I don't think that there was a thought process in, oh, I want to do this as a, you know, career. But I knew that there was a need for conversations around sexual and reproductive health as a whole. I knew that it wasn't just endometriosis, but of course my personal experience did make me kind of really aware of what goes on and how things happen. So from there, it kind of just spiraled into different parts of the sexual reproductive sphere. And so I decided, well, why don't I just do a master's in this and see, you know, what else I can do, how else I can be to researchers and make it digestible for people everywhere, you know, make it easy to understand. Make it so that, you know, even if a teenager wants to listen to what I have to say, they will be able to understand what this is and how it works. And so that's really my aim, is to make all of this digestible and easy for people to understand, and therefore, I suppose, behave differently.
I know that you wrote a memoir, and I mentioned it earlier, Hot Water by Nadine Dirks. Even though endometriosis is a disease, are there other parallels that we can draw to this in life of inequality? Like, you know, sometimes we think something was given to us when we were born and it feels unfair next to other things that happens to you in life. I mean, do you draw other parallels to endometriosis in Hot Water, the book that you've written?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's important to look at things from an intersectional lens and understand how, you know, we can look at identities and we can see how different identities can make your life more difficult. And it's not always of your choosing. It's not something that was given to you. So I make lots of parallels between how, you know, certain treatment of certain groups of people is different to others who are seen as, you know, better in some way or another. And then also very importantly, disabilities. I think oftentimes we think that we are inclusive of people with disabilities because we give way to someone in the mall or whatever. But oftentimes we aren't. We don't realize how much more supportive we could be or what we do that could potentially create harm in someone's space, in someone's life. So I do go through all of those different aspects and look at how all of these different things can make someone's life more difficult, including having something like endometriosis, and how it also affects the manner in which you are treated when you're seeking help, and how you know, how that help is presented to you, what is presented to you to begin with. So I'm really fascinated with how different sorts of things can kind of culminate to make something a lot harder for you, but also trying to figure out how I can use that to speak to different people and create change in different environments. So that's really my aim.
Well, in a very uncanny, crazy way, endometriosis brought me and you together. So I don't thank God that you have it, but I thank God that you are able to use it to change people's lives. Nadine Dirks is a writer, opinion maker, activist, communications expert. Her work, interests, and expertise lie in intersectional feminism, gender, sexuality, including sexual and reproductive health and rights. Her book, Hot Water, by Nadine Dirks, which we all need to get. It's live right now on babybrunch.co.za. You can have a look at it. It's an intimate and bold exploration of chronic illness, racism, and inequality in South Africa. But you heard it also. It's a way of understanding people, because we can't say we are inclusive or that we understand someone's situation if we didn't make time to educate ourselves even more. And I really think that this memoir is one of the ways that we can do this. Nadine, any final words from your side about why did you call it Hot Water, by the way?
Well, I called it Hot Water because, I mean, you'll recall I said to you that I found that hot water was therapeutic for my pain and my symptoms. But also that when I started to talk about these issues and I started to, you know, raise awareness and question certain things and advocate for myself, I found myself in hot water. People didn't like it. You know, people don't like being questioned. They don't like when you say, well, this just seems really biased to me. So what is going on here? And so that's why I called it hot water.
Well, you know what they say, if you want to mess with us, just stand up for yourself, man. There's always an opinion. People are learning. And they will through hot water. Nadine, I appreciate your time so much. Also, what we'll do is we'll give you the number for inquiries if you want to buy this book in bulk for your business and learn through how to either be in or stay out of hot water by Nadine Dirks. Nadine, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Oh, I appreciate you too. I'm so proud of you, man.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior. Available from leading pharmacies and retail stores.